When a double-dealing newbie joins their D&D campaign, five friends are jolted out of their fantasy world. This is the story of The Party, an amazing web series available to watch on YouTube. Margaret, the co-creator, director, and executive producer of the series, reached out to me to see if I was interested in learning about the experiences of two of the series' cast members as Asian actors in LA. And you know I said yes. Now, I am extremely grateful for the time that Nabila and Zach lent me. This was a fantastic interview, and the series itself is phenomenal, and I know you folks are going to love it. I'm also extremely grateful for our wonderful patrons, who are the backbone of Asians Represent. If you like what we do, please consider supporting us at patreon.com/AZNSrepresent. Now, let's get to the episode. I want to talk all about the show. I want to talk about your characters. I want to talk about your career so far, because I am extremely excited about The Party. For a little bit of context, I've been playing D&D for over 20 years. I've been working in the tabletop gaming industry since 2017. And I've actually written for official D&D products. But I have never seen anything like The Party before. The Party is super intriguing to me because it's very much this generation's version of The Guild. If you folks have watched The Guild, like with Felicia Day. But there's something about The Party that I think is special. It's a tabletop RPG, so it's far more relatable to me as somebody who was very much discouraged by my family from being like, why would you pay $13 a month for a World of Warcraft subscription, right? That's a waste of money. But like, oh, you're reading D&D books? Okay, cool, that's fine. Oh, D&D's helping you with your math? Cool. You need the help anyways, Daniel. But I think The Party is also really important and more relatable to me because there are like two Asian characters in it, played by you folks. And your characters, without any spoilers, because this series deserves to be watched without any spoilers, your characters are very different from other Asian characters that you see in media. They very much break a lot of the stereotypes that we see. If you disagree, like, I'd love to know why, but for me, I've never seen characters like that before. I've never seen characters that I can relate to.
Say, he's just a male guy, but come here. It's okay. Sorry.
I might keep that in.
Terrifying.
He might make an appearance behind me. He's beautiful, and
that's totally okay. I'm like, you know what? I want to talk about how important this series is, and your dog's just like, fuck no! I'm gonna go kill the person outside of our home. But yeah, as I was saying, like, you know, it was refreshing to see your characters. It was refreshing to see real people. Not fantasy characters. Your characters were real people trying to live their lives. And I think that was what really drew me into the series. Like, I consume a lot of D&D content. Like, I love D&D.
Buddy.
So does your dog.
Sorry.
But.
My reaction.
That's totally okay. Hi, Dex. But there's something about The Party that is more than just D&D. It was relatable. Like, it could have been board games. It could have been video games. It could have been anything. But I think the stories, the individual character stories, were just so fascinating that I think anybody can really get into it. Like, I'm going to have my partner watch it, and she's only played D&D a handful of times, and I think she'll still enjoy it. So with all of that said, I am super excited to have you on like the podcast with me. I am happy that your dog is also, you know, with us. And Zach, if you've got pets that are being silent, I'm happy if they're with us too. But before we dive into it, I don't want to assume that our audience has watched all of The Party. I hope that after this, they all do. But I'd love to start with introductions. Let's start with you, Nabila, just because your dog's quiet right now. Who are you? Like, like, who do you play in the party? And, you know, what have you done so far as like an actress?
Who am I? My name is Nabila Hussein. I am an actress in Los Angeles. What do I play in the party? I play DM, which is short for Dungeon Master. About the only, I think that's about the only double name that our cast has, because no one else has two names. One calls me Dungeon Master in the show. It's just DM, always. My acting journey, I am officially about a little bit over 5 years in film and TV in Los Angeles. So it's been a really great journey.
That's incredible. 5 years. Are you considered like a veteran at this point? At like 5 years?
Listen, so I'm going to tell you something. This is my definition of what it means to determine success for yourself or a level of mastery for yourself. Before I came out to Los Angeles, I said to myself, I'm walking into a completely different industry. I don't know anything really about it. What can I do to master this world so that I can walk into this new field confidently? And this was my idea. This was my brilliant plan. No one ever told me this. Okay. I said to myself, when was the last time I got an official sort of degree or a certificate of completion? I said, it was in college and it took me about 4 or 5 years. Okay, chalo, I will do it again. I will invest the next 4 to 5 years in this completely new industry. And I'm going to do it by myself because apparently people call LA the Mecca of film and TV. Okay, let's go find out. And that's exactly why I've in terms of the question about do I feel like a pro or a veteran, I think it's more like I feel like I have mastered the education of film and TV at the 5 year mark. Now it's just putting it to practice. What? That's my answer for you.
I love it. Because I know that like you have a background in Bollywood dance. So your sort of transition was from like dancer to actress. Is that kind of your journey?
Almost there, Daniel. We're getting deep. Okay, we're getting. I have a bachelor's degree in civil and environmental engineering, and I worked as a roadway designer in the transportation sector.
That's awesome.
About 7 years before I moved over. So around the same time is when I got the opportunity to act on TV. Bollywood dance was something I did in the evenings, and I did it to almost a semi-professional degree because I did it for 10 years because I couldn't sit still, Daniel. I can't do the subscription for the gym. I can't do it. So I happened to find a group of people who wanted to get together weekly to rehearse and put on shows every season. So that's knock on wood. That's been basically my past.
I feel that not being able to sit still. Listen. Not being able to sit still. I can't relate to the dancing thing. I took dance classes in university and was just like, not for me. Not for me. I've tried salsa, ballroom, swing. Couldn't do any of it. But for me, my sort of thing was martial arts. And that's where like, hey, we've got our second guest, Zach. Why don't you introduce yourself? Because you're more than just a martial artist. You're more than just a martial artist.
But, you know, it's a big plus for me. I'm Zach Kumaishi. I play Yorick on The Party. Yorick's just a fun little guy, you know? And my acting journey has... I'm the baby of the cast as far as relative years in the industry. I graduated from UCLA's School of Theater, Film, and Television in 2020, right in the middle of everything.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was a real time getting my bearings while everything was pretty much entirely virtual. While I was there, my degree was theater with a focus in acting, stunt fighting, and martial arts choreography. That's always been pretty much a 50-50 split in where my attention has been going forward. I've trained in, 10 to 14 different martial arts from anywhere between 1 and 20 years.
Wow.
So I'm kind of like a jack of all trades kind of thing. I don't have like a black belt in any one discipline, but I do have a wide berth of experience.
You took the Bruce Lee approach.
Exactly. Yeah.
You took the Bruce Lee approach. You do everything. And I honestly really liked your character in the party because you're like that little chaos agent.
Exactly. Chaos he didn't agent. Have like a big. One of the discussions that I had with Margaret going into the shoot was that Yorick doesn't have a huge, like, you know, arc, maybe so much as some of the other characters do, where they have like these, you know, intense moments of self-reflection. And they're like, wow, I'm really just having to recategorize everything that's going on in my life. Yorick was the high insight player in real life, where he was just kind of sitting in the background. He was one of the first ones to clock a lot of the things that were going on. And he was also just kind of cool with it, as long as his weekly D&D was able to go uninterrupted.
Yeah, and I mean, I loved that. I think you need to have that kind of balance in your sort of cast. Mm-hmm. But what I also like loved the most about your character was that you really don't see Asian characters that are, you know, trying to be actors, that have all these like other side hustles, that are seen as desirable, that are seen as characters who are, you know, trying to romance others. Like years ago, I got to interview Simu Liu before he was Shang-Chi. And we talked about Kim's Convenience, which is filmed where I live in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And we talked about how you don't see a lot of Asian characters of any gender seen as desirable and nuanced and smart and sort of very self-aware at the same time. And that's what I really liked about Yorick. Yorick was just there to have a good time. They knew exactly what they wanted. And they kind of, in their own way, they drove the drama forward. And so you're playing this double role as like a character in the fictional D&D game, but also the character in this real world. And I think that's what made Yorick really cool. And same thing with DM. I thought DM was really interesting because I really vibed with that. DM was a character who was like not super satisfied with their life and felt a lot of control and purpose with their game. And I think that's what a lot of people feel. I think a lot of people, especially during the pandemic, I bet a lot of Asian people too, don't really like or are unsure about the path that they've taken because of family. And they turn to other things, and D&D is such a powerful tool for this, to express themselves, to explore their identity, to explore their creative side in a way that's really safe. And I think more people need to see this, because I think a lot of people experience D&D, at least in film and television, through things like The Big Bang Theory. And it's just, hey, we have these characters and it's a sitcom and they're playing D&D and they're all nerdy. And their interaction with D&D is very simple. It's a game they play and it's there to reinforce these character backgrounds of their geeks. But in the party, D&D was more than just, hey, these characters are nerds. That wasn't what was communicated. It's, hey, this is where these people bond. This is where these people have this found family, and this is where these people express themselves. And I think that's what makes the party really relatable. I don't know if you agree with me or why you think the party might be special.
I mean, I totally agree on just the overall view of Dungeons and Dragons in common media, and like the impact that it's had has shifted so considerably in the last 5 to 10 years. You know, I mean, Stranger Things, Critical Role, everything that's bringing Dungeons and Dragons into the popular media lens has been really fascinating to watch how it's shifted as just the perception of it.
Yeah.
So I think that that's something that, yeah, I feel like a show like The Party wouldn't have the same thrust as it does now, before, you know, D&D was given the chance to kind of reinvent itself.
Yeah.
I think when I first joined, I mean, to jump off of that, I didn't realize, I actually didn't know a lot about D&D.
That's okay.
Okay. You have 20 years, and Zach is incredible in his own game and in his own experience with D&D, and we can probably get to it later in the conversation, how I found out how incredible he actually is at DMing in real life. But when I first discovered about the script and the role, in my research, I reached out to a few friends, one of them who DMs his own games and has been doing it for about 5 years, and then the other who is a player in a game, who also teaches computer science on Coursera, and he works for like a huge computer science firm. Intelligent, both of these. Listen, these people are the smartest people I know. And I go to one of them, it's my best friend's husband, all the time, Adam, for answers to things. So when I told him about this, or I told Swati, and she said, you know, I think you should talk to Adam, he plays. I said, he plays what? He said, he plays D&D. And I said, this is unreal. I discovered that D&D is such a beautiful, like, I don't really want to say well-kept secret, but somehow of a secret that unless you hear that conversation being had, they don't come out of the woodworks until then. And then they will tell you. And then I went into a deep dive and I said, oh, this is actually a game that has inspired many of the shows that we grew up on and raised us for the last 50 years. Like Game of Thrones and everything else. And so when you get down to the root of it and you're playing with your own friends, which I have the incredible opportunity of playing now, we play with the cast, you don't know it until you're at that game. Like why this is such a phenomenon. So my worlds have opened and many doors have opened since then, and I'm really grateful. But that moment of discovery, Daniel, I gotta tell you, there's nothing like it when you're like, oh, that came from this. I knew they were insane. How did you come up with all of these things? Like, your imagination's epic. And then you're just so delighted to find out the source.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, D&D has the story of D&D is very interesting. Because it comes from wargaming in the 60s. And even further back, the tradition of designing war games for military use. It goes back really far. You could even say, since you play the Dungeon Master, I like to say DM stands for Dramatic Manager, because you're managing drama. But the first Dungeon Master, some might say the first ever DM, his name's David Wesley. And he invented a game that is very much improv called the Bronstein. He invented it in 1969. And I think more people should do this, because in the Bronstein, essentially everybody gets a character sheet. But your character sheet is just, hey, this is your name, this is your identity, and these are your objectives. And every person gets one. And you play the inhabitants of a fictional town, originally called the Bronstein. It was like this sort of medieval town. And the referee, or the dramatic manager, would essentially tell everyone, hey, this is a scenario. And people in the room, up to 24, were free to essentially try to improv and roleplay their way to meet their objectives by, you know, forming alliances, whether they be false or not. And at time intervals, people will write down orders for their characters and hand them into the referee, who would then move the board around. And this is kind of where the tradition of role-playing at the tabletop came from. And one of the co-creators of D&D, David Arneson, was a really big fan of the Bronsteins. And that kind of eventually became Dungeons & Dragons. So I thought it was really cool seeing, you know, Yorick in a very dramatic way trick everyone into going to an improv class. And I was like, the folks who wrote this and the cast all really get it. Because Eric was like, oh, if we're going to play better, we're going to improv. And there was even that scene. Mm-hmm. when Jean is like, I'm going to teach you how to min-max. I'm going to teach you how to optimize your character. And York's like, you did the right thing for the story. And I thought that this was just such an accurate depiction of what D&D is. Because, Zach, you mentioned Stranger Things. You mentioned, you know, we talked about Big Bang Theory. We talked about Critical Role. But I think what you folks did with the party was the most realistic look at what D&D was. Like the drama between the players, the how close the DM holds their story to their heart. Like it was, it's probably the best way to introduce someone to D&D, in my opinion, because of your performances, because of the way your human characters are. And I really love that. So I just wanted to sort of tell you how much I appreciated the work that you did. But I had a sort of a hard question, or maybe this isn't a hard question, depending on how much thought you put into this. Before we kind of started the recording itself, Nabila, I told you that I had watched every episode of like this 2017 web series you did called Brown Girls. First of all, incredible. Put that on the record for the recording. Everyone should watch it. I signed up for an account to watch all of it on the website. And with Brown Girls and with, you know, both of your characters in the party, I feel like you've done something incredible when it comes to bringing about positive representation of Asian characters in media. Because I think you folks, being in the industry, know better than probably me that there has been a long-term problem of how Asian characters are portrayed. Like, we don't see characters with nuance or even respectful, you know, writing behind them, right? And you don't really realize how important representation is until you actually see what you've been missing. And I think that's the party to me. So I wanted to ask you folks, like, what do you, you know, from your own personal experiences, because all three of us have vastly different experiences, right? Zach, my experience might be closer to you because I went to school for something that is less traditional than Nabila, your engineering background. Like I went to school, my background's actually in anthropology. Nice. Kind of like one of your characters in the party. My first reaction was, this is a flagrant ethics violation. And I had to do an I had to get ethics approval when I was doing my doctoral and master's work. And for me, I was like, this is so wrong, but I really love it.
I mean, let me tell you, I think the most outraged responses that we got on the series, like full emails drafted and written to the producers, far and away were the people involved in like academia and anthropology going, this cannot stand.
Like this would not, like you'd be kicked out so fast. Yeah. But hey, I stuck with it because, like, A, I thought the writing was great, and B, it's a web series, you know, and in D&D, you take liberties with the rules, just like you do when you're writing a series. So I wanted to ask you folks, like, when you're sort of playing a character on, like, the party or in any other role, because, you know, Zach, you said you're new, but you've got multiple credits on IMDb, and, like, some of them look, like, really intense, too. Like, what part of you do you bring to each role you play, knowing that you may not get another chance, knowing that people of color don't get to fuck up. And so I want to ask you folks, like, what do you bring into your, you know, the roles of like DM and Yorick and Layla in like Brown Girls? Like, what do you bring into that to make sure that, you know, there is nuance and there is respect to the depiction of an Asian character. So you don't set the industry back and you set the industry forward in your own way. I'll start with you, Zach, since I asked Nabila first for the introduction. What do you bring into it?
I mean, I feel like my experience in the industry is a really rare one. Because I'm mixed. I'm half Japanese, with like a little bit of Hawaiian in there, but mostly just like 50-50 white Japanese. And I can list on like one hand the number of current actors and performers in the industry that are Hapa. So like growing up even less than seeing Asian representation in media, seeing Hapa representation, I remember this very distinctly. The one time in my childhood, like growing up, seeing someone going, oh, that's someone who looks like me and my members of my family, was Ryan Potter, who he's
I know who Ryan Potter is.
He's right now. But he was in a Nickelodeon series called Super Ninjas.
Yes, S U P A H. Yeah, I know what Super Ninjas is.
I think it had like Randall Park and George Takei. Like it was
icons.
Yeah, it was a great show. So I had Ryan Potter in Super Ninjas, and I believe he was also in Big Hero 6. And then recently we've gotten Will Sharp from Succession, who I haven't watched yet. I haven't either. I first saw Will Sharp on a Netflix series called Giri Haji, which if we're doing shout outs, so good. There's a lot of, it's a bilingual, like family drama kind of thing, Japanese, English. And it has like queer storylines and mixed storylines, and it's so good. But like that was it for me, right? That was pretty much all of the representation that I saw of people who looked like my story. And so, you know, the mirror side of that is we get people like Emma Stone and Scarlett Johansson who are just like, I'm mixed. I'm part Asian, right? Like
Emma Stone one was so egregious.
Yeah. Well, I don't even remember the movie, but I've seen the clips of just like, you know, since Hapa people can be white passing, having white people passing as Hapa, it's just so, you know, it's a small niche that we occupy.
Yeah. And it's something that we've talked about a lot on the podcast. We've actually done like 4 hours of content on mixed representation in D&D and how that is super complicated too. And we have like this ongoing sort of love in our community for Keanu Reeves, who is I know his father is Native Hawaiian, and on I believe his paternal father's side there is some Chinese Hawaiian as well. So for me, like Keanu Reeves is like, yes, and he grew up in Toronto too. So like I get it when we find a handful of actors who we feel like we're close to, or who have experiences similar to ours, or who we just want to root for because we want to see them succeed, because if they succeed, more Asians will succeed. That's why I think John Wick is really cool, because like this is an Asian hero who's just fucking everyone up in this blockbuster franchise that will call for more Asian actors to have interesting roles and more stunt workers like you to very much transition from doing stunt work to directing and writing, because the directors of John Wick were both stuntmen.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's also, you know, John Wick, I feel like it's also so impactful and so interesting because he's not the like orientalized vision of Asian people in stunts, right? He's using like, I think they call it gun-fu, but like it's a lot of mixed, grounded, heavy action as opposed to like, you know, wire work and aerial flips and doing all that sort of thing that you see traditionally in like Asians in stunt roles.
Yeah, it's not a wuxia movie.
Exactly.
I've actually got a question related to that, and then I do want to go back to the original one for Univila as well. Mm-hmm. It's how I kind of feel about Shang-Chi. I think that Shang-Chi could have been a far more impactful movie and story if he didn't have to go back to China to be a superhero. If that story took place in San Francisco, and if his father was, you know, still Tony Leung, the icon, but if his mother was maybe white, and if Shang-Chi was a mixed character, and if the entire story took place in San Francisco, I think that could have been a deeply resonating story for more people.
Yeah,
I don't know if you agree with that.
I totally agree, just because I feel like so often in media when telling stories with, I mean, I feel like this goes with pretty much any demographic, whether that's LGBT or any specific racial demographic, the story when casting a person of color has to revolve around, you know, their cultural experience, you know, and Shang-Chi was written, I don't know when the comic was first published, but
a long time ago. I think the character's been around for a while.
It's an old story, right? And so I think that's just such a direct correlation of being like, we're going to write, you know, a Chinese superhero, and so then everything about the character must be coded as like a Chinese character, right? When in reality, it's so much more complex and nuanced, where you have, you know, I'm like a fifth generation Japanese. So like my family has been around, and there's so much more to our history than Japan. Like that was such a footnote in our story and my history. And that's not really something we see. It's always like first generation immigrants, even in a lot of popular representation, right? Like, I mean, I'm trying to think, we had Seeing or Turning Red, we had Everything Everywhere All at Once, and so much of those very good, impactful media, but it's all first, second generation, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I selfishly, Turning Red is just for me so good because it's set in Toronto. And I wept when I first watched that
Oh,
movie.
Yeah.
We, towards the end, there's that scene when they kind of go into that other world. And I had to pause the movie and I cried for like 10 minutes. I had never seen myself like that.
Yeah.
But we need more stories like that. And I think with, you know, Everything Everywhere All at Once succeeding, we're going to see this. A24 just needs to do more Asian stuff. And my hope is that with the Marvels coming out and Kamala Khan, mm-hmm. we're going to see even more characters like that. And even with Across the Spider-Verse, we have Spider-Man from India now in that yeah. movie. And I mean, I think this is going to bring about more interest in casting Asian actors in more nuanced roles that are not just, you're an Asian Kung Fu master. You can be this, you know, you can't be this Asian Kung Fu master. You could be this assassin like John Wick. or you can be the stoner Asian like Randall Park and Always Be My Maybe. That for me is a really important one. But I want to go back to you, Nabila, because I do want to talk about brown girls as well.
Sure.
But I wanted to like circle back and ask the original question about like, what did you bring into the character of DM?
Yes. Okay. I was prepared to answer. I continue this conversation in so many ways. Because
we can. Wherever you want this to go.
This is such a wonderful discussion, but I'm going to rely on my training of answering your questions directly. That's kind of my first.
Okay.
If you've ever met anyone in a technical field, one of their first instinct is to be of service to the question that you are asking. So if you immediately ask a question, I will immediately answer that. And then if I'm skilled enough, veer into going into the other conversations. I found out, after coming into the entertainment industry, that they do that sort of first. And that is the art. If you ever want to chat with me about an hour-long discussion about the difference between the technical world and the artistic world, I will tell you so many things. Okay.
I'm very curious about the artistic world. So my day job is I work in tech as my day job.
Yes.
And I do this podcast and RPG design as like a freelancer. So I don't know about the artistic side, which is why I'm so curious about the work that you both have done.
That's interesting you say that, because you are doing the artistic work of having a conversation fluidly, really effortlessly. What you are doing is exactly right. When you asked me, okay, how did you, yes, you did. When you said, how did you prepare for DM? My brain just stopped and said, answer his question, stop on everything that you were thinking. And that's a training in the discipline of the way the brain works, because we are used to working with numbers and productivity, because time is our sense of God. Okay, right. So answer quickly your question and then coming back to this conversation, which is so lovely. How did I prepare for DM? For DM, one of the things that I was told, or the first couple of things I was given, was the two sides of her auditions. One was when she comes to Viola and says, hey, what you did for my plan, you completely ruined my plan and I have to rethink my structure all over again. But you know what? You did good. Okay, you're in. Here's your mini. That was that moment. And that just that little bit of dialogue. Our creators are so, so talented. I can continue on how absolutely talented they are. Just in those little 5 to 6 lines, you can see an arc immediately in DM. And in that moment, you can see how quickly she will speak her mind, judge you for the person that you are, and then recover, have a self-acknowledging moment, and then present a solution. To do that in 5 to 6 lines as a writer, mwah, you know, chef's kiss. Also, to tell the story of what that character is, she's complicated. You mentioned this before, as in general, while I didn't know the actual role of DM and how they do play multiple roles and all of the non-character players in the game, the actual script lent itself to how quickly DM makes her decisions, how solid she is in who she is when she is talking to her friends, which is most of the show. And in moments of her other parts of the story where she goes through a breakup, that was the second side that we had to do for the audition. It was her date with Ecstasy. And she just asks Ecstasy, why do you like me? So here's DM who knows exactly what she's doing and how to talk to all of her friends. And yet when someone says, I like you, she gets very insecure about why. I tell you, just from those two sides alone, I figured her sense of being out. She's someone who's coming of age into her own sense of confidence. She might have her things in order. She might pay her rent. She has a job. She wakes up. She organizes things. She's really good at being creative and imaginative and knowing how to host really well. But she does not know why she is worthy.
Yeah, and I feel like every Asian person listening to this is just like, it's that scene when it's that improv scene when everybody's getting stabbed. It's like, am I? And I mean, you even open this conversation with like, how did I? You know, what is success? This is my definition of success. I think it's something that like we all struggle with, right? It's like, we never feel like we're doing enough. We may feel like we're checking off all the right boxes. We may feel like, you know, we're making enough money. We're pleasing the right people. But we're never thinking about ourselves.
No.
We're never thinking about ourselves. And I could see that in DM. And I could see that in Layla, who you played in Brown Girls, which, first of all, it's an achievement because, like, that series got nominated for a Primetime Emmy for Outstanding Short-Form Comedy or Drama. Because I think the two characters were like so similar. I could totally see that as like a prequel. I thought that episode 4, the episode where Layla's family member comes and visits, and they have that really tender moment where Layla sort of like comes out. And I thought that was just so human. It was so beautiful that Layla was kind of assuming the worst of their family, and their family going, cool, yeah, that's okay, yeah, so what? And I really love that, and I want to see more of that in media that I consume. I want to see more vulnerability. I want to see characters like DM who may kind of have everything all together, but tying everything together, everything is bound together by tape.
Yeah.
Or they've got all of this trauma that they've collected. That's with their ex, right? With, you know, their sense of belonging in their community, or how their D&D group functions as kind of their therapy.
Correct.
And you don't see that. You don't see that if you watch Critical Role. You see a group of people who are very, very good actors. Playing D&D at the highest level on a beautiful set. You don't see the scheduling conflicts. You don't see the personal drama. You don't see the, oh, we don't like this new person. Or we don't see how one person may try to guide a new person on how to play the game their way. We don't see that. And I think that's what makes the party so interesting. That's what makes the representation so interesting with your characters.
And I think what really made the representation so meaningful for me was, like we were saying, we have all of these moments of drama and conflict, and we have representation of, like, you know, DM is also queer, and that's never a conflict. That's never something that needs to be addressed or talked about. It's just part of her life, and all of the drama that happens doesn't revolve around it, right? It's just about, I don't want to lose another player, right? It's similar to how you're talking about representation, about just being and having background and being Asian and how that influences our lives. Just be part of the character and not the central conflict or anything like that.
Yeah, your character's identity is more than just the perception of your culture, right? You talked about how you are, you said you were fifth generation.
I believe so, yeah.
What does that mean? Because it's not like your character is speaking Japanese. It's not like your character is eating Japanese food.
And that's something that, you know, processing just in general has been so complicated for me, because, you know, my family past my great-grandparents didn't really grow up speaking Japanese. My grandparents lived on the Hawaiian Islands during World War II, so learning Japanese was not a big part of the culture. So I feel like culturally, my dad's side of the family is much more Hawaiian than they are Japanese, even though, you know, if we were to take a 23andMe, it would probably say something different.
Yeah. And I bet your family's experience, your family's Japanese experience was very different from, well, people in Japan, especially if they were in America during World War II.
Yeah.
Right? That's a very, very, that's a unique experience that a lot of people, A, don't see in media, yeah, and B, don't think about.
That's, I was just reading a fascinating kind of biography, historical narrative called Over the Mountain, which talked about Japanese American soldiers during World War II and just the cultural differences that you would find in Japanese immigrants who went to mainland US and Japanese immigrants in Hawaii. Such a culture shift as they came to, like, training camps, because all of the Japanese American regiments in World War II were kind of segregated, because they were, you know, a security risk. But just seeing those two groups interacting, and just the differences in how they processed culture and how they processed language, right? Because a lot of Hawaiians in that time, it was, like, pretty heavily pidgin. So anyways, that's all just a bit of a tangent to say that yeah, I feel like the way that it's influenced the character and the way that it's kind of just background in a very different way is something that I tried to bring into Yorick. There are a couple throwaway lines where I cemented Yorick as Hapa.
I'm going to have to rewatch to find those.
It was okay. I can spoil it because a lot of it didn't make it into the edit. But there's just a part where Yorick is just like, "I'm going to tell you my life story," and then they walk off into the sunset, and Yorick, it's unscripted. So I did a lot of just ad-libbing as we were walking away, like so many different lines. And because I wanted Yorick's experience to be true to my experience, a lot of just the opening intro that I would do was related to World War II, Hawaii, Japanese immigration, colonialism, all that sort of thing. Which I think we only get like a snippet of. They took one of the tamer ones because it started to go off on a tangent. but I think the line is like, it all started with a Japanese fishing boat, a box of matches, and a dream.
Oh, that would have been cool to see in this series. That'd be super cool to see. I will make one recommendation for you. There is a for me, like seeing Pete, like I think you made a really important point, and it's seeing Asian characters kind of do things that aren't necessarily extremely close to their Asian identity, mm-hmm. or kind of struggle with their Asian identity, right? I think it's important to just kind of exist and just be an Asian person.
Yes. The other thing that just inspired me to have this thought too, Zach mentioned he is fifth generation Japanese American. So you have four generations before you who are American, born and raised, and immersed in the culture. One of the greatest things, and this is something to come back to your conversation about how does this relate to both your roles in Layla and as DM and your representation of being Asian, your culture, depending on the generation that you're in terms of no matter what culture you're in, is going to vary, just like all of our technological softwares vary from generation to generation. And that right there, to me, that's kind of an answer to say, okay, culture is what you have to, the equation for culture is what? Is you're looking at your experiences, your nearby people's experiences, and then maybe some genetics. And when I say genetics, I mean, there's certain foods that certain genetics, maybe it doesn't like pair well with. Okay, there's certain yep. people that can't eat spicy food, and there's some people who love spicy food. There's some people who taste cilantro and think it tastes like soap. I'm not one of them. I don't get it, you know? So like that's, to me, we live for a finite amount of time. And to think, this is, I'm going to get to you, you might not like this or you might love this, Daniel.
I think I'm going to love it.
Okay, good. Because it's to say like, how do I say this? I had a world literature teacher in high school who once, when I wrote an essay, I wrote something like, well, everyone in the world is talking about this one thing, okay? Whatever I was writing about. Mr. Mateo, he said to me, Nabila, do you know everyone in the world? I said, excuse me? And I went to Cambridge Public High School. What? Best school in the world. Anyway, and he... And I said, excuse me? And we were bad. Half of the kids would talk back to our teachers. It was really fun. I said, what do you mean? And he said, do you know everyone in the world? I said, what does that have to do with any of my sentence? And he said, you wrote in your paper, everyone in the world thinks the same way. I'm asking you, do you know everyone in the world? I said, no, but my mom talks like this and she's, you know, so she probably knows everyone in the world. And this is the first time I was actually critically thinking. Okay, stay here with me. And I said to myself, she said, well, I'll tell you this, at least in this class, you can only write about the things that you know. And if you do not know everyone in the world, you cannot write a sentence that says you know that everyone in the world believes something. I will tell you probably one of the best lessons I've ever learned, because I also got embarrassed in front of the class when I learned this lesson. I said to myself, okay, what does that mean when I speak about a demographic of people? Pause. And I think ever since then, I'd always done theater in high school and in middle school, and I was always a part of the entertaining and the dance and the theater stage community, excuse me. Ever since then, I had always taken a role that I had received as a singular, independent person experiencing a singular, independent moment in their given circumstance. And ever since then, to be quite honest with you, the more I got into the industry, especially in the last 5 years, I thought that we would grow as a part of the industry the way that I grew back in 10th grade in Mr. Mateo's class. And in my mind, I said, you can't ask that question. An actor in a given role, we do not have access to people. We physically, as a human being, do not have access to the greater whole. So that's one thing, to ask an actor to speak on the greater extents of, you know, the demographics they serve. Now, pause, fast forward, but then you get into the business side of things. because essentially our product is to serve the greater masses, what is called an audience, what is called, bringing a community to at large and making them feel seen for both mental health reasons, for confidence reasons, for establishing their dreams and what they think they could be that they had never thought about because no one in their family has done it. So to set up dreams, that is big. You're developing their future culture. Okay, now we're coming down to, I guess, answering the question of DM and Layla and their being Asian and them experiencing everything that is actually very almost like fourth, fifth, sixth generation American, in my opinion, the contents of being queer and being of multiple different identities in terms of their work and their work-life balance and living independently even. The concept may not be being queer and being multifaceted may not be in the forefront of the media, of all of the worldwide media that there is. It may just be America that's leading the force on this. I say that to say, for example, I'm from Bangladesh. Mm-hmm. I was born in Bangladesh and I moved to the United States when I was about 8 or 9 years old and I grew up in Boston, okay? In Bangladesh is like, it's like 53 or 54 years old now, the country itself.
Yeah.
So one of the things that they're doing, they're fresh out of just trying to figure out how to manage and govern their country within 50 years. And while the culture is rich and the entertainment is rich, they're trying to find the representation of their own communities. And that might not look like the same as a fifth generation Asian in America.
100%.
So that to me is where I have so much appreciation for the vast range of all of the media outlets that we have now available and actually being very specific in terms of what audience we're speaking to, because just having Asian representation as a whole reminds me of being, scolded by my 10th grade teacher who's like, no, but you can't speak for all those experiences. You've got different generations. You've got different countries. You've got different languages. You've got different foods. You better have a bigger podcast,
100%. I mean, I think the point here is that, we're not a monolith, right? And I think in order to have that sort of nuance, in order to have audiences feel seen, you need to have more than just three actors playing all of the Asians.
Yeah.
And two of those actors can't be Emma Stone and Scarlett Johansson, right?
You're not gonna get the nuances, and and there's so many of us actors. It's all vessel. An actor's work is whatever we can do with our vessels. My voice, my sound, my body, my appearance, and my work with the script is not the same as Zach's. And you are going to get a different performance out of Zach than you are out of Nabila. And so if you have a bunch of us telling ready, first of all, an actor who's ready and prepared for the vessel to tell that story, you're going to get a lot of beautiful stories that these writers and creators can tell.
100%. And I think that's why we need to see more of this. Like, and I know that on the YouTube channel, it said like season one of Party. And when I see somebody like a series, say season one, that means there's going to be a season two, right? Right.
We are not officially disclosing any information. We're in talks with the producers, I should say, are in talks with a couple of different options to get a second season off the ground. It's just a matter of, acquiring funding, whether we're going through a secondary producing channel, whether we're going for something more ground up crowdfunding. But we'll hear a lot more information, I believe, after the writer's strike ends.
Of course. Yes, right. Of course. So. Absolutely. That is cool. That's cool. Like, I'm honestly, I hope everything goes well for the writers with the strike. I think obviously, like, they are the sort of like the backbone of the industry. Like, these can't be- That's okay. Those were barks in solidarity with the union. I hope to see a new season. When I found out that you have a martial arts background and doing stunts, I was like, oh, wouldn't it be awesome if in the scenes where they're in character in costume, we have like an action sequence.
Let me tell you, I adore fantasy action. Oh, I think because I've worked in a lot of stunt adjacent roles, but I really love choreography and stunt coordination. And I think there's so much you can do. Like, I feel like that's one of my oldest influences is Avatar: The Last Airbender, right?
Oh yeah,
is taking a magic system and really incorporating the physical martial arts aspects of it. Can't be beat. So
cool. Have you played the Avatar RPG?
I've not yet, but I've heard some pretty good things.
You should play it. You should play it. I recommend it. I'm also excited for like live action Avatar and then the new animated stuff coming out this is a completely separate conversation, but I think Avatar is a really interesting example of how Asian cultures and Asian characters can be portrayed in a nuanced and respectful way by non-Asian creators.
Yeah.
Because Avatar was created by two white guys.
And it was so impactful, especially, mm-hmm. In the early 2000s when that sort of thing wasn't that common. I think Avatar to me almost feels like one of the most true expressions of Asian cultures in like a fantasy genre. In just a way that's respectful and true to like a lot of different cultures. I think that's something that's super rare.
Yeah, I think if we're talking about just like Western media, then like I definitely think it's groundbreaking. I definitely think you don't see a lot of that stuff. I mean, you've seen shows on like Disney, like Jake Long, American Dragon, Dante Bosco, who's also Zuko. There are like snippets of it, but I think Avatar is like a really good example of a fully fleshed out world.
Yeah.
Where you see this sort of blending of Asian cultures, but in a way that isn't saying, oh yeah, there are samurai everywhere, because in the official D&D world, Kara Tor is like the Eastern Realms, the official Dungeons and Dragons Asian world, and there are samurais and ninjas everywhere, but then things are Chinese and then things are like South Asian, and it's just like extremely blended in a painfully orientalist way.
Yeah.
But that's to say, I think, should, and I don't want to say when, the party returns for season two, I hope to see more development in these characters. I hope to see more stories away from the table. And I hope that, when everybody is back together, we're going to see more people coming into season two having played D&D for the first time because of the party. So I'm really excited about that. And I'm really excited about like what you folks are going to do in your careers. Now that said, the last question I have is really an easy one. If folks want to, learn more about what you've done, see what you're going to be doing in the future, where can they find you on the internet? I'll start with you, Nabila. Sorry, I should have just said person first, then asked the question. But Nabila, where can people find you on the internet?
Sure. I have a website. It's NabilaHussein.com. And then I also have an Instagram presence. It's NabilaHusseinOfficial. It's my handle on Instagram. You can follow me. I try to post all of my sort of projects. I specifically keep that for my projects and all of my film endeavors. And it's been a joy. So that's where you can follow me.
That's awesome. And how about you, Zach?
I struggle to maintain a lot of internet presence, but the most reliable one is my Instagram at the other Kumaishi, because there's only like two or three other families out there with our last name. It's fairly uncommon, so
you're lucky. I have to deal with being Daniel Kwan in a post everything everywhere all at once. You know how many Twitter DMs I got after they won that Oscar? I got so many DMs and so many like at mentions on Twitter. Like, congratulations, wrong Asian. Like, yeah, I wear glasses and wrong Asian though. So I think being unique is a good thing, yeah. At least from my own experiences. The lesser Daniel Kwan. Oh, I should have that as a handle. But I want to thank you folks for like your time. I know we've got a time limit and I want to respect that. I'm going to include all of your links to your projects, your IMDBs, your Instagrams and all our show notes and the little like description on YouTube. And I want to kind of leave you with like a parting gift. And it's a recommendation for a song kind of about the diaspora. You mentioned, obviously, your family's history in the United States, Zach, during World War II. There is one of my favorite bands of all time, Linkin Park. The rapper from Linkin Park, Mike Shinoda, did a sort of like a solo project under the name Fort Minor. And in 2005, on his album Rising Tide, there's a song called Kenji. And Kenji is about his family's experience being interned the United States during World War II. And it is a deeply powerful song that actually has sound bites of his own father and I think his aunt talking about their experiences. And so I recommend that to both of you since it's extremely powerful. And to the audience, like, please watch The Party. It is incredible. The more views, the more power that the creators have in bringing about a season two and in turn bringing about more nuanced Asian representation with your two characters. So that's it. Again, thank you for your time. And I look forward to just seeing you folks like thrive in your own ways.
Amazing. Thanks so much for having us.
Daniel,
you're very welcome.
This was such a nice conversation. Thank you so much for inviting us.
You're very welcome. And again, both welcome anytime.
Do you love Star Wars but kind of wish you didn't? Then join us on the Expounded Universe podcast as we read through all the old Star Wars novels that took the galaxy far, far away that you know and love and turned it into a place where Han Solo can punch a giant otter and Luke Skywalker almost gets eaten by a giant gold-plated pillar of Dinty Moore beef stew. Did you like Princess Leia? Well, too bad! Now she's a space racist! Don't believe me? You'll just have to listen to find out on Expounded Universe.